Now, your favorite music apps are available on Contour. Go from watching a musical to listening to your favorite music. Enjoy a country western and then a country jam. Or go from action flicks to something that makes you feel like an action hero. Now with Contour from Cox.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Jurassic Park Radio. Join host Todd Jurassic as he explores the great outdoors and the great unknown. Here we go.
Hey, this is Todd Jurassic, your host of Jurassic Park Radio. And tonight we got a special guest, one of my favorite Bigfooters, Dave Big Tex Cleaver from Texas. Dave, are you there? Let's see. Dave, are you there?
Can you hear me?
Oh, yeah, sure, I can hear you now. All right, we got a message. Hey, this is your host on Training Wheels. And we're learning how to do this, but we had some problems here before. Dave is from Texas, an amazing guy with years of Bigfoot experiences that most Bigfooters would only dream of. This is my fourth show. I'm kind of excited, and we had a bunch of bumps because Dave and I have tried this, about five times. What do you think, about five times? So we finally got a connection, which I'm pretty excited about. But anyhow, let me introduce Dave. He's from Texas. He's been doing Bigfooting for his whole life, and he's kind of like a Dr. Doolittle of Bigfoot. Wherever he goes, the Bigfoot seem to follow, even from a kid. But I'll let him go into that because he's got some pretty crazy stories. Anyhow, Dave, why don't you tell us how you got interested in Bigfoot?
Well, I think it's like a lot of people. I really didn't get interested in it. Somehow it got interested in me.
That's so true.
The first experience, of course, and I didn't realize for many, many years, but, back when I was about five years old, I had an experience at my grandfather's place one evening, and happened to if I have to go outside, my wolf is starting to howl. She does this to me every time I don't pay enough attention to her, so I had to walk outside. But I saw one out by his woodpile one evening, and, it was probably, you don't remember a lot of stuff when you're that age. But, I can close my eyes and just picture it like it was yesterday. And it really scared me very, very bad. Of course, 5 years old, you don't have any point of reference for anything like that. In fact, I remember thinking, and this sounds kind of crazy, but, we used to, in those days, there was, Three Stooges used to be on TV a lot. And I can remember sometime fairly soon after this experience. I don't know how many people watch the Three Stooges, but there's a couple of episodes where they have that gorilla in there. And when I saw that, I was just, that was the closest thing that I had seen, someplace else. So, for a while, I thought that I had seen a gorilla. So that's,
I can imagine one in Texas, because you wouldn't even think of Bigfoot then. So that's around what year was that, do you think?
That was in the fall of 1959.
Oh, yeah. So you wouldn't even consider it Bigfoot. It would be, what did you guys call it? Did you have a local name, or was it just Something you thought maybe a nightmare creature?
I told my grandparents about it, and told my parents and my older brother, and of course, you know, you're 5 years old, you're crazy. But it was such an alarming experience to me that the only name I could come up with for it was Black Lossie. But, you know, even though nobody believed me, you know, telling the story, I managed to get all the kids in my grandparents' neighborhood and my brother, they were all scared to death of Black Lossie, even though they, you know, supposedly didn't believe me. But, you know, I got a lot of ridicule for that story. So kind of early on, I became, you know, what I later termed as a closet footer. I just didn't talk about it with anybody. And then I had another experience that in, I believe it was July 19th of 1969. And I think that's the right date, but it was the day after they landed on the moon. So I know that.
It was, so that would be 21st then. My birthday was the 20th, so July 19th, 20th. Okay. So that would be the 21st.
And that was a daylight sighting. I was at a summer camp on Possum Kingdom Lake. It's a camp called Camp Grady Spruce. And they would have a deal that you could volunteer for. They'd do a Brazos River trip. So I wanted to do that. And there was, I believe we had maybe 8 canoes, 10 canoes. So there was, you know, 2 youngsters in each canoe. And then there was 2 counselors that came along on this deal. And the first night we camped, I didn't see anything, but we were camped on a grassy place. And then there was a ridge line that was about 30 feet back from the river. And for about 2 hours, different campers kept saying that they saw a glimpse of an animal that was spying down on us. The first kid said he thought it was a bear. Another kid thought it was a wolf. And then the last kid that saw it before it got dark, he said it was a gorilla. Man, I remember this very well. Well, anyway, nothing happened that night. But the next morning, me and my canoe and tent buddy, you know, we got packed up before everybody else. And I'd put the last load in the canoe and came back. And he ran up to me and was all excited. And he said, I saw that animal again. It was looking down again. And I said, well, what was it? He goes, I think it was a fox. I mean, that's 4 different. So I had figured out a way to get up on the get up this cliff. And so I said, well, let's go see what the heck this thing is. So I climbed up first, and when I came over the top, I heard something running off. So I immediately started chasing through the woods down this, it's kind of like a game trail. And I came around this rock outcrop and smacked right into this tree. And, you know, I kind of saw brief stars. I mean, it knocked me pretty good. And I was actually sitting on the ground, straddling this tree. And when my eyes kind of focused, I noticed that the tree was hairy. And I looked up, and here is this giant creature just looking at me. So I screamed, and it screamed, and it's really weird. You know, you always hear the Bigfoot, you know, think it, and I've heard him do it before, and it's a deep roar, but this was like a woman's scream. And I immediately started doing this crab walk in reverse, trying to back up from this thing. And I got to my feet, and it's still just standing there looking at me, and started running. And then my friend, he comes around the corner, and he's like, whoa. So, you know, we were both screaming and yelling. We ran back down this trail, and we were, I would have to say, it's the only time I can ever say I was in this mental state, but we were absolutely in a blind panic. Absolutely. Because we ran off that cliff at full speed, both of us. Full speed. We didn't care. We jumped off, and this thing was, I don't know, 20, 25 feet, maybe a little more. And we ended up landing in some shrubbery that, you know, kind of Rambo style. But, you know, if that hadn't have been there, you know, we probably both would have been fairly seriously injured if we hadn't landed in this shrubbery that kind of broke our fall. You know, and we, the counselors and all the kids that were waiting, you know, they heard all this screaming, and then they saw us come flying off the cliff because it was right next to where we were camping. And, you know, the counselors got really upset with us, thought we just staged the whole thing. But, you know, we were both pretty traumatized and said, you know, there's a giant hairy guy up there. And, When we got back to the camp, you know, we were still pretty traumatized by the whole thing. And, you know, I wanted to, you know, talk to the main, you know, camp guys and all this stuff. But, you know, nobody paid us any mind because everybody was gathering around the TV to watch the moon landing. So, hey, guys are getting ready to land on the moon. We don't care about your hairy man that you saw. So, you know, that, and I still hadn't really made a connection. I had never heard of Bigfoot or any of that stuff. Now, I'm going to back up a little bit.
Can I ask you a question on that?
Yeah.
Let me ask you a question real fast on that. Now, have you talked to your friend that have you ever seen this guy since? I realize you're what, probably in your teens or something back then. Have you talked to him ever since?
I have never seen him again.
He probably
never seen him again.
Some kind of mental home or something after that. Oh man, that's a great story.
And I've actually thought about, you know, calling the Camp Grady Spruce and maybe seeing if I could, you know, track the guy down. I can't even really remember his first name. I think his last name was White, but I just don't know. But the one thing that I thought it was, and this goes back to my earlier sighting when I was a young kid, you know, I had, you know, at that time, my grandfather's place was in a semi-rural area, and there was a wonderful man that took care of the people next door's place. And he was just one of these fun-loving, amazing guys, but a real country guy, and, you know, always full of jokes and loved to play with the kids. Just one of those older guys that was really country that you just don't see anymore. Yeah. And I remember telling him about it to see if he knew what it was. And it's really the only time I've ever seen him that serious. And he just got real serious with me, and he said, "That's that boogeyman, and he will get you." He said, "Don't you ever go out in your grandfather's woods at night. That boogeyman will get you." So that kind of got my attention. So from then on, hold on here. I'm out in my front yard, and something's crawling around.
No,
out
can I
here.
Ask you, was there any kind of vocal or anything from this encounter that you had on the Possum Kingdom at all? Did it yell at you? Did it make any kind of movement,
or did you just stand there and ran off?
When
I screamed, when I first saw it and locked eyes with it, you know, I screamed, and then it screamed back at me. But when we ran off,
blow your hair back, your hair.
No, it did. But I'll tell you, I made physical contact with it. You know, it's probably 8:30 in the morning. He could have pulled me to pieces, and he was big enough and strong enough to do it, but he didn't. He didn't do anything.
When you tell it was a male, female, I'm guessing you're thinking it was a male. You think it was a male then?
I didn't notice details, too many details. Okay. I was pretty terrified, but the feeling I got, it was definitely a male.
That'd have been pretty exciting.
For anybody that's interested, if you look on any of these Bigfoot websites, I think those Wood Ape guys and the BFRO guys have some reports that are from the same place. It's in Palo Pinto County in Texas. But there's actually, in the area where this happened, there's an interesting legend. Kyle Mountain, which is right near there, used to be called Ape Mountain. And there was there was a story, and, you know, this is how I guess a lot of people in those days would try and put an explanation for something like this. But there was a story that this mad scientist had moved out to Kyle Mountain and was doing, and you can look this up, and I may not have the story completely right, but anyway, he was made a laboratory in this cave up on top of Kyle Mountain. And one day this big, huge crate came in with this wild animal, and he came and got it before the authorities could figure out what was in it. So in typical universal horror genre, you know, the people went out to Kyle Mountain with their torches, you know, and this is in the 1800s, and they were going to confront Dr. Hugo about his experiments and what this monster in the crate was. But, you know, as the story goes, he blew himself up in there and blew the cave shut. And from then on, there kept being these reports of this wild ape man, you know, running around that area. So actually, this goes back to, and I've had, you know, once I figured out, and I'm guessing sometime in the early 70s, I saw something about that Patterson-Gimlin, you know, Patty, and they had those pictures and stuff. Probably somewhere around 70, 71, and I was finally able to, you know, the light finally went off in my head. Okay, somebody else has seen this thing, and this is a Bigfoot, is what I've been saying. So that was kind of my moment to realize that, you know, what it was that was going on. So I became very obsessed and interested in it, and I guess that's kind of when it all started. But, you know, still, I always kept it to myself. You know, I didn't talk to friends, even family. You know, nobody knew about my Bigfooting. It's just something that I've always really done on my own. And even to this day, there's probably maybe only 4 or 5 people I've ever gone Bigfooting with still. You know, and you're one of them.
No, sometimes it's best. Yeah, I know. Thank you for letting me go with it. It's unbelievable, the stories, because
I got
so many of them.
I talked to some people, you know, I started talking to some people trying to, you know, maybe get them interested with me and going out. But, I mean, everybody had some pretty crazy ideas about what the creature was and how to find it. And I just didn't agree with any of it. You know, they kept doing these same methods that had been proven not to work time and time again. So I was always one, you know, to think out of the box and to try and come up with, as I used to call it and still do, species specific gear And I've come up with some pretty cool stuff. I mean, I really have.
I would say that the hat and mat, that's pretty awesome stuff.
I think a lot of big footers, and I came up with this term, I guess, about 15 or so years ago. I call it the danger feel effect. You know, they're not getting any respect. So, you know, Rodney Dangerfield, hey, I get no respect.
Yeah.
And one thing that I have learned in my, you know, and I've had a couple other sightings, and I've had some pretty intense near misses where I am pretty certain I could have had additional sightings, but I didn't want to have a sighting because I felt like I was in a
totally get that. Yeah, it's a little different when you're in the woods yourself. You talk tough until you get in an area that's really spooky.
One of my early plans, and I used to do this, is I would try and go early in the day, very stealthily, very quiet, no visible technology, you know, all that kind of stuff, and put myself in a place and just hunker down and hide and try and do different things to call them in. And those are the situations that would get a little tense. And a couple of times I had Bigfoot actually respond to my, you know, and I would have some pretty elaborate plans of not only how to get to a location, but, you know, how to hunker down and stay hidden, and then what I was going to do when the sun went down. But I'll tell you, if you do something like that and the Bigfoot shows up and he doesn't know you're there, and then all of a sudden he knows you're there, that ain't good.
Oh, you mean
like
the
old
river.
TV show where they had that lady that was Mother Nature, and they would give her margarine, and she said, "Oh, this is butter," and they said, "No, it's margarine," and then the fireballs would come down. It's not nice to fool Mother Nature. It was kind of one of those things.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm talking. Yeah, about
I mean,
the
like
home,
the like
old.
That one
Go
experience
ahead.
You had on the river with the cows. That was one of those experiences. Tell
right,
everybody
and just,
about that, and
that used to be my main Bigfooting area, and this is within a half mile of one where I had my sighting in 1969, right over there by Kyle Mountain. But the plan I had that time was, I think the best way to get to where these creatures are in a hurry is, you know, I guess you could do it in a canoe, but, you know, I got a kayak, you know, that was green and kind of camoed out. You know, the canoes are okay, but you inevitably are going to hit the side of the boat with your paddle, and it's going to make that kind of boom noise that'll travel for miles down the river. So, plus a kayak is a lot faster. It's very stealthy. It's faster. So, and I'll try and make this quick. So my plan was, there was a cliff face on the one side of the river, which is the same cliff face I had jumped off all those years earlier. So I hugged that and went upstream against the current instead of down, because right over there by where this was is Kyle Mountain and a couple of lookouts that had a really good view. And, you know, this a lot of people come down that river during the day. Not a lot, but, you know, enough. But I didn't want to be seen, so I hugged that cliff so nothing could see me, and I was going the opposite way to try and get to this location stealthily. So I get up in there, get myself all hunkered down, and I guess about 30 minutes before dark, now across the river, and this is a place called Chick Bend on the Brazos. There's a cattle farm, and it's been there probably over 100 years. So they're running cattle over there. I think they still do. So I started doing this wounded calf call. And I probably did it for 15 or 20 minutes, and one of the mother cows over there started getting really upset at me doing that. In fact, just up the river slightly from my position, there was a low point where they could cross, and she actually started coming across the river very angrily towards my location. So I decided to quit. And so I guess about another hour and a half went by. You know, it's dark. And, you know, I decided to do a little kind of a whooping thing. I usually don't make any calls. Somehow I think the ones down here in Texas don't really respond to that as well as they do up north. But I did one anyway. And instantly across the river, and if I'm looking straight across, that's 12 o'clock. So probably at the 10 o'clock position, I heard this roar. I mean, it was the hairiest sound I have ever heard. And you could tell that there was some serious lungs behind what had roared. And then almost immediately, it started mimicking a barred owl, making the barred owl called. And then to my horror, behind me at 2 o'clock and 7 o'clock, it was being answered by two more. So I'm in the middle, one across the river, two behind me, maybe 45 yards behind me. And this is beginning to freak me out. And about another 5 minutes go by, and this is probably the worst animal sound I've ever heard.
Sorry for laughing.
There was a calf that was this calf that you could tell was just getting brutally killed. I mean, something was going after this calf. I've never heard such sounds coming out of an animal. And within 8 seconds, it was quiet. So I said, all right, man, I've had enough. So I got out of my blind, and I had, you know, I had a fire all ready to go, and I got it going and stoked it up pretty good. You know, I got my parabolic dish out because I wanted to see what the ones behind me were doing. And, you know, I could hear them moving around, but they eventually moved off. Of course, the poor mother cow, and I don't know if it was the same one from earlier, but, you know, she starts calling for her calf. And this went on all night and into the next morning, 9:30 when I left. She's looking for that calf all night long. And once I had a chance to think about what happened is, and this is just my opinion, but I think they heard my wounded calf calls. At least three of them came down. And, you know, one of them was going to go over there and try and make the kill. But I think what the other two were doing on my side is they were down there by that low area I mentioned earlier. And I'm guessing they were there so that if the one that was on the cow side spooked them and they ran across the river, the other two were in perfect position to ambush them.
Yeah,
that's
sense.
What I think. That's what I think they were doing. But in that area over there is just incredible, and I am so, so sad because when we had this drought, maybe it's been six years ago, that whole chick bend, that whole area just burned in that huge forest fire they had there all those years ago. And when I went back, and of course it's been a while, you know, it went from this lush forest to something that looked like it was on Mars, just completely burned to the ground. So, you know, I haven't been there in many, many years. I don't think it'll ever be like it was, you know, not in my lifetime. So I guess that was the end of that. I've thought about going back and And but you know, so much of that area burned up in that fire.
Yeah, it's good though for stuff to clear out and you know regrow stuff sometimes. But is
you know, and I've looked at some satellite footage, and it doesn't look like it's coming back too good. So, but that was when I decided, okay, I'm going to quit trying to fool these things. And, you know, get someplace where they're coming through and surprise them. You know, I think it's a better idea to just go camping and, you know, just do some things that, that might pique their curiosity. And it doesn't take much, you know, and they'll come around.
Well, I've been roared at one time. And I'll tell you, I was roared at with Chester. And I'm telling you, when you have something roar at you and it doesn't fit any sound in the book, it's beyond intimidating. So when you're spooking them like that, and I mean, last thing you want to do is, I mean, that would be, it could be terrifying, you know, and it sounds all cool and wonderful, but you know, these things got some lung power and maybe some, you know, potential for, you know, to hit sound at different levels. And it would be beyond terrifying. And I know that, you know, we were armed that night and it still made me want to check my pants when I got home. So I can imagine you're by yourself and you're, you know, cattle being tore up
just,
and some of the other things sneaking up on them.
Just between you and me and the radio audience, that July 69 deal when I ran into it, yeah, that's the only time in my life I've ever peed myself.
I probably would have too. Probably wouldn't keep. I'd keep a lot of people out of the woods. In fact, you might want to check the
and I was,
you know, mental homes around there. Maybe that guy out there.
I think I was 14 years old then. So now I don't try and sneak up on them anymore. Now I used to, you know, you go through a whole, you know, over the years, your criteria and what you want just changes.
Sure.
You know, for 20 years I was obsessed with inventing. You know, inventing technology, you know, to get them on audio, to get them on film. You know, I wanted to prove it to the world. And now I've done really a complete, you know, turn a 180 on that. I'm not really, I don't care about doing that anymore. I think it's just better. They are better left as a cryptid, you know.
Yeah.
So, I mean, what's going to happen? And another thing that kind of changed my mind is I talked to some people within the Park Service that would definitely know about this sort of thing. And, you know, an off the record talked to me about it, which they did. And what I came away with from that is, you know, the government has known about these creatures for a very, very long time. And I think to some degree they do manage them. But one of the main reasons they do not want these things or they don't want to admit that they're out there is, and I understand this, all the state and federal parks have a brochure. Now they have websites, you know, and they tell you all about the state park, how wonderful it is. And every one of them's got a section on the indigenous wildlife and what you do if you see something and all that kind of stuff. And basically, they don't want to put it in the brochure. I mean, what are they going to say? Okay, you know, you might have a Sasquatch hanging around your camp, you know, curious, come through there and everybody goes to sleep, take some food. You know, the people that were going to go to the parks are going to end up in Disney World. They're not going to want to go where these things are roaming around. And,
yeah, a lot of people
want to
get their families there.
You're
going to
get a bunch of Bigfoot nuts like me, you know, coming to the state and national parks and, you know, Bigfootings, you know, walking around the woods at night screaming and hollering and all that kind of stuff. So it's just, you know, it's a money thing. They spend a tremendous amount of money on these incredible national and state parks, and they just don't want to list it in the brochure. And I get that. And in fact, I agree with it. I don't think it should be listed in there either. Yeah, I can. Because you look at any of them, they'll tell you all the wildlife that's there, and you could run into snakes, you know, all that kind of stuff. So they just don't want it in the brochure.
Yeah, at this day and age, it's pretty hard to believe that they don't have any kind of clue. I mean, they're just playing their game. And, you know, you look at some of the stuff. I don't know if you've seen David Pilates' stuff on the missing people. I don't know. That's all Bigfoot.
Well,
a lot of that sounds just demonic to me. But
I
you know,
have
so
read
it's not
a little
surprising.
And I think some of that is true. But I think just like humans, there's good ones and there's bad ones. And,
yeah, and I
believe
think
the government
would be
goes
tempting
in there
to be a little
and
kid.
They,
I
take,
mean,
they try and take the and they try and take the bad ones out. They have some kind of special team that goes in there if, you know, these people disappear or there's enough of these reports. You know, they go in there and they try and hunt, you know, the culprit down, take them out. I'm pretty sure
nothing would surprise me anymore with stuff. So they definitely.
And there's one thing,
know, would,
if I believe anything about these creatures, these things aren't any closer to being related to a Gigantopithecus than we are. That is the wrong thing. This is an ancient relic of humanity. These are ancient people. And if you've noticed over the years, some of the most promising DNA that's come out there, they'll come back and go, "Up, it's contaminated with human DNA." That's when I'm jumping up and down and clapping and doing my dance, because to me, it has to be contaminated with human DNA, because that's exactly what it is.
Well, you've had
and
some
these
experiences
things,
look at
the humanity that we have. I mean, Oriental, you know, Africans, Caucasian, you know, all that, you know, depending on where these indigenous people evolve, they're going to take on different appearances. And, you know, the hairy people are the same way. And that's why they look
now
different from here to here to there. And
have you experienced anything like that? That would make you think that?
Yeah,
I know that you're telling me with the pizza boxes, for example.
I've seen two different kinds down here in Texas. I've seen the big, huge black ones, like everybody thinks they are, and then I've seen, in fact, the last one I saw, which was about 2 years ago in December, about 30 feet away. Saw it about noon. Was tall, skinny, kind of brown, lightish brown hair, and kind of sparse around the chest and the stomach area. You know, it looked, and I think this is a southern species that probably goes down into Mexico and South America. I mean, you know, who knows? But, you know, so. And it was definitely, you know, a hairy man, but it wasn't the traditional-looking Sasquatch that you're always hearing about, and it wasn't that big. It didn't have the real big, broad shoulders, but we locked eyes for maybe 10 seconds or less, and this thing made a couple of moves, you know, to get away that were mind-blowing, just absolutely mind-blowing. And I never, ever would have seen this thing if it wasn't for my wolf. I have a couple of dogs I hike with, and whenever I come up on these Bigfoot trails, they don't want to have anything to do with it. But you've met my wolf. I've had her about 6 years now, and she knows that I'm interested in these, and she will track them. In fact, I think she runs off and plays with them. I know that sounds kind of crazy, but anyway, she's the one that found the one that I saw about 2 years ago. I hear her do this little howl thing, and her tail's just wagging, and she's looking at me, and she's like, "Here it is. This is what you're looking for." And I looked over there, and it stood up. So she actually found it. I mean, that Bobo guy.
By crazy moves, what do you mean? Explain what you're talking about by crazy moves. What do you mean exactly by that?
Well, there was right behind it, there was a about a cliff that was maybe 20, 25 feet down, and it covered 20 feet to get over there, maybe in two or three steps, and it was a zigzag, and then it jumped off this cliff down into this swampy area, and you could see where it landed. I mean, I've got pictures of the whole thing, and when I ran over there, my male Rhodesian Ridgeback and my female wolf were just standing there looking down into this, you know, very dense area. And I didn't hear anything. I could see where it landed, but I knew that it had concealed itself very quickly. And it was just hanging around out there, down there, seeing what I was going to do. I mean, I got over there so quick, I heard it running off and I didn't hear anything. So I knew that I was still very, very close to it. And the dogs didn't want to go down there. Even the wolf didn't want to go down there. So I didn't want to go down there. So what I ended up doing is I looped around, probably about half mile or so to the right, did this big sweeping loop, and I was going to come in on that swampy area down there from the opposite side, which is what I did, thinking that maybe it was going to be moving that direction and I would meet up with it again. But, you know, I never saw or heard anything again. I just, at that point, I stopped and took a bunch of pictures of where it had been crouching down when the wolf found it, because there was still a clear place where you could see. And it was down there by a fairly large dammed up area on the creek. So it was probably down there getting some water or something. And then, of course, the place where it landed made a pretty big impression. You know, and it didn't just jump down. It jumped out. So it landed probably at least 20 feet from the edge. So it jumped and went out. It didn't just hop down, and so it was moving pretty good when it left off that thing and landed down there, you know. So, but I took some pictures of where it landed and all that stuff, but it was, it was pretty crazy. That's the last one I've seen.
You saw one in Washington once.
Yeah.
Remember that? Well, you didn't see one once. That encounter in Washington was insane. You didn't think you could go ahead and talk about them.
This is a place, and I still go there. It's right outside of Granite Falls. And a buddy of mine, who recently passed away, very sad, but he had an amazing cabin up there. And buddy of mine, we had been hiking, and his cabin is like on top of this mountain. And there's this is kind of a long story, but I'm going to try and shorten this up.
Oh.
But anyway, we were down in the ravine down from the cabin, and this is probably 300-400 feet down in the valley where we were hiking, where this creek goes through. And I was going down this rough game trail, and my leg caught on this branch, and when I walked, it opened up this perfectly round entrance. And, you know, this is that stuff up there in Washington. I don't know what those plants are, but it comes up to about your chest. So anyway, so we thought that was really interesting. And you could tell right there at the entrance that the limbs of whatever those bush things they have up there, it was woven. It was woven to make this entrance. And, you know, obviously something did it. that had hands. I mean, a bear claw couldn't do something like that. So we got down on our, we had to crouch down kind of on our hands and knees, but not, but it still, there was still some clearance. And it went in about 8 feet, and then it kind of went to the right. And there was a whole area that was kind of excavated out, and a bunch of grassy stuff was in there, like bedding. And I mean, this was just crazy. And my friend had a video camera, and I said, "Man, start videoing this." So he did, and once we got into that, the main part of it, you know, and when you were on the trail, you could be standing right next to it, and all you see on the top are living plants. You would have no idea that this tunnel had been built in there if I hadn't accidentally moved that branch that was spring-loaded to cover the entrance. I mean, you never, ever would have seen it. I've tried to find it at least a half a dozen times since and never could find it again. But anyway, so we're inside this thing, and both of us looked at each other, and we were just terrified. We didn't hear anything. Didn't see anything. And I said, "I am feeling really, really vulnerable." And, you know, and this was probably 20 years ago. It was before I realized the mind blank ending with a K. I don't want to say it on the air, but you know what I mean? These things can mess with your mind. They can put all kinds of crazy stuff in your mind. So,
well, that makes you uncomfortable to where your body's going nuts.
We need to get the hell out of here, and we need to get out now. So we did. went back up to the cabin. He left that night. So I was up there by myself for one more night. And I guess about midnight, I could hear something coming up the side of that ravine towards the cabin. And it was making all kinds of noise doing it. Now, this was a cabin, was like your proverbial 12 by 12 with a window on one corner and a window on the opposite corner. So I'm listening to this noise of something coming up this thing. And it comes right up to the cabin. But you can, and there were no curtains on the windows. I mean, it's a pretty rustic cabin. I didn't see anything in the window. Then I heard the sound. It sounded like fingernails that were scratching down the wall, and it went from right at the edge of one window, down one side, down the other, down the back side, and along the other side, right up to the next window. And, you know, I'm waiting to see something walk in front of the window, but it never does. And then it repeats this same thing, you know, scratching, and then it would hit the house and it would shake. This went on for about 30 minutes. And, you know, I was getting pretty freaked out. I think he got
the message.
This little cabin is, it's just sitting up there on a flat spot. It's not anchored to the ground. I'm like, you know, this thing could pick this cabin and throw it down in the ravine. And I was kind of afraid that it was going to get on the backside and push it over because this thing was right on the edge. Anyway, yeah, that was pretty freaky. And I told myself, here's my chance. I can see this thing if I want. All I need to do is just go out the door and confront it. And there ain't no way.
Yeah, right.
You chicken or whatever you want, but there ain't no way I'm walking out that door. No way.
Oh man, you should have gone out the door and just roared at it. So wow. Do you have any idea? Were you able to find any tracks or anything? Was there anything?
No,
branches
no tracks,
broken?
No, nothing. I mean, it's pretty clear out around.
How about anything broken going up the
cabin? And there's just a bunch of loose granite, you know, and stuff. It wasn't going to leave any tracks. But I tell you, that was probably my scariest experience right there. That was even scarier than the little hunt deal I interrupted.
Well, yeah, obviously.
At least
they didn't,
on that hunt
deal,
you know, I'm packing some heat. You know, I had my shotgun on that deal, so I felt a little bit safe.
Jeez.
But I didn't have anything when I was there in Washington. At that time, I didn't have, you know, and I wouldn't want to shoot one of these things anyway. Let me say that. I am definitely a no-kill. I mean, there is no way I'm shooting one of these things unless he's getting ready to do me some harm. Then, you know, then it would be self-defense. But, you know, I'm not looking to shoot one or prove it or do any of that.
So, oh, man, I can't even imagine that. I don't know how you slept all night after that, even going out to your vehicle and stuff after that. I mean,
I didn't sleep. I didn't sleep the rest of that night. I didn't. I just looked at the clock until the sun came up, and then I drove into the airport because, you know, I had a flight back to Texas.
Now, has there been any other encounters like that that you've had up there, or is it just that one particular time? Or
this friend of mine, he bought it was a couple hundred acres. And he was on top of the mountain, but down in the valley, he actually parceled off a couple of lots and sold them to a couple of people. And one of the really, really remote lots that was out there, one of his girl space friends, you know, a lifelong friend, you know, she bought a place. She bought one of the lots and built this really amazing house down there. And he spent one night in it, one night. And the night that she was there, she saw one looking in her window at her. And this window's 7 feet off the ground. And she could see just the top of its shoulders and its head. And she never spent another night there again and ended up selling it.
Yeah, I guess I'm looking for that. If you ever see her or anything like that, let me know. I'm buying a cabin.
I'm sitting out here in my backyard, and here comes a skunk. Lord.
Well, you better get in. We're coming close to the end, but, you know, we've got about 7 minutes left in the episode. But Dave's going to be back on again because he's a lot more to share. But anything quick?
And there's another phenomenon that if you'll have me again.
Yeah, I will.
Really,
the next
part of the
month,
research
for sure.
that I'm really heavily involved in now, and I wouldn't mind actually doing something on it. It's called the urban Bigfoot.
Yeah,
and,
that's
you know,
stuff I want to talk to you about next time.
Yeah,
that's been some pretty crazy stuff.
I never, ever, ever expected was these things, but you know, when you think about it, it makes complete sense.
They work everything. I mean, if you think about it, you get it. I live in Tulsa, and we have raccoons, coyotes, foxes running the streets at night and working the sewers and stuff. And these things are a heck of a lot smarter, and they know how to work stuff. Garbage dumps, dumpsters, places people throw out food, animals congregate and stuff, and they're not stupid.
Well, I mean, I hike around.
I
live in a small town, and there's just miles and miles of forest in the Texas Hill Country, and they're coming into my little town at night. I mean, there has been undeniable evidence, and we can talk about that, I guess, next time. But
yeah.
I'm out there in the woods, and I rarely see deer or wildlife, and then you come in the city. And they're everywhere. They're everywhere.
Yeah.
The coyotes moved into town.
And that's...
The mountain lions have moved into town. So why not Bigfoot? And I'll tell you another thing. I'll explain it more next time. But, man, they love Domino's Pizza.
Yeah, I want you to say that for next time. That's crazy. But Dave, it's been good having you. Anything that you want to add before we wrap up here? We've got about 5 minutes left, but we're probably going to cut short so you can save some of that for next time.
Anybody that's interested in this, try to embrace that these things are an ancient form of humanity, a caveman or whatever you want to call it, and, you know, treat them with respect. And if you want to go out there and have a good chance of seeing one, you know, leave your technology at home. Leave your cameras, leave all that junk at home. These things are definitely hip to technology.
Yeah.
And if you're going to, if you bring all your cameras and all your gear out there, you are not ever going to see one.
Yeah, I think it definitely is more of a surprise thing.
That's what most of my big technology stuff is about. It's all stuff that can be hidden. You know, I've got a hat that I can wear that's got a wide angle and a telephoto lens that you can't even see. I've got a DVR in my pocket that's about the size of a pack of cigarettes. And I also have a pair of glasses that have a wide angle and a microphone on it that I wear. And of course, you've seen my game camera that I came up with that is totally unique. It doesn't give off any electrical impulses. Basically, the triggering device is non-detectable by wildlife until the trap is activated. And you saw how that works, you know. Plus,
yeah,
you know, I can rig multiple cameras to it. And but anyway, what else? Is there anything else you want to ask me?
No, that's offhand though, and I think we're probably pretty gonna much end with that. I'm just glad having you on here, and we're going to close this edition of Jurassic Park Radio. Thanks, Dave, for bearing with me, because we've tried, about 5-6 times to get this going, but finally got it going tonight, man. Sounds good, and you're a great guest and a great Bigfooter and a good man and a friend, and I will be having you on here shortly again. So, anyhow, thanks to everybody.
Well, I will look forward to it, and you have a good evening, and all you folks out there in Radio Land have a good one, too.
All right. Sounds great. Thanks, Dave. You have a great night, everybody.
Bye. All right. See you later. Bye.
Now, your favorite music apps are available on Contour. Go from watching a musical to listening to your favorite music. Enjoy a country western and then a country jam. Or go from action flicks to something that makes you feel like an action hero. Now with Contour from Cox.